The education is a key part for me, and I do it because I want to do it. But the customers that buy our products, I think they like value that we give back and that we're not just selling to make money. We're like selling to make a difference. So it's a personal thing, really. But incidentally, obviously, it has an effect on the business.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Huge thanks to Craig Thomas for the intro to this episode's guest. Thank you, Craig. And in this episode, we are talking about bees because that is the why behind this person's business. You'll be hearing about how passionate she is about that and also how that passion has shaped the business. We'll be talking about community. We'll be talking about partnerships. We will be talking about how they've grown the business from an idea 8 years later to over 2 million in sales. And we'll also be getting quite deep into the Kickstarter campaign that they were about to run when we hit the record button on this and that will have finished by the time you hear it. So well worth going and checking out their Instagram and LinkedIn to see how all that went as well, because you'll have heard the before on here. And make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on my guest top tips, including a brilliant traffic top tip all about a VIB club. And if you're making assumptions about what that is, you're probably wrong. So you're going to have to listen to the end to find out what it really is. And now to introduce our special guest. Faye Whitley is the co-founder and managing director of BeeVive, creators of the original Bee Revival Kit and recent Dragon's Den stars. Founded in 2018, they've sold over £2 million worth of product via their Shopify store and over 350 wholesale customers selling their products in the UK. Hello, Faye.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Awesome to have you on the show. How did you get started in the world of e-commerce? Was BeeVive your first experience, or do you go back further?
I do go back further. So my previous career was in fashion design. I was a graduate and I actually worked for multiple brands on like the high street / a rock star clothing designer, which was amazingly cool. Got made redundant and kind of led me on this new path where I started working for a workwear company, essentially. I was a business development manager, but I feel like I always had this itch in me that I wanted to run my own business. And so whilst I was working full time, I set up my own like smaller, well, it was a startup where I would embroider sweaters with animals on, because I've always loved insects and nature. And so that was my first intro. So I built my own website. I think it was on Wix. And I launched from there. So I had some, but I was definitely learning as I was going.
And then what led you to go from embroidering jumpers and being a business development rep to creating BeeVive, a completely new product, brand new business? What was the catalyst for that?
Yeah, so it was really by chance. My partner had taken me away for my birthday. I was working, had this business, and so he took me to this shepherd's hut to have a break, stop working for a bit. And it was on our last day that we were like exploring a local town, and we came across this bee that was grounded on the floor. And we just couldn't leave her. Like, she was really struggling, almost rolling over onto her back. And so scooped her up and carried her to first we tried to find flowers, which sadly there were none in the vicinity. And it was Jake who said, oh, my grandma said, you know, if you can't find a flower, then, you know, a drop of sugar water will do. So we carried her to this cafe, asked the lady for some sugar water and a spoon, gave us a really odd look. And 10 minutes later, sat outside on the little bench and the bumblebee took off. And if you've ever saved a bee, the feeling is so great. We felt like heroes, as we kind of described it. And so on the way home, we were like Googling, like, oh, is there something that I can carry around with me for the next time this happens? And really that was the catalyst of a year's worth of research. And we found out so many amazing fun facts about bees that kind of made us fall further in love with them, but also the challenges they were facing. And we were thinking, if we could create a product that not only had a purpose, but it was a tool to raise awareness and create conversation, that we could inspire people to take action, like lots of different, you know, planting, building bee houses, those kind of things. And so that's when the Bee Revival Kit was born.
And how, actually, let's talk about the product as it is now.
Yeah.
Or your product range, because you sell multiple versions of the Bee Revival product, and then you have other products as well now in the mix.
Yeah, so the original Bee Revival Kit is like an aluminium shell keyring, and it contains a bottle which is pre-filled with a bee food syrup. So it basically mimics nectar, and it is resistant to microbiological spoilage, which means you can carry it around with you safely. And each keyring we create has a tag attached. And if you scan the tag, it loads an identification guide so you can visually identify what type of bee you've saved. And then if you really want to learn more, you can create, like, click on the link and read a further blog about that bee. So the idea being that people could go out for a walk, they'd see a struggling bee, couldn't find a flower, save it, scan the guide and be like, I've just saved a red-tailed bumblebee, and like share that experience with other people.
Got it. And then what was the next product you launched?
So then we moved on to the bamboo version of our keyring, which was 100% plastic free. And it also came with seed balls. So we did it in collaboration with a company so that people could plant, as well as, like, sugar water is an emergency solution. But the bigger problem is that we've lost 97% of the wildflower meadows in the UK, and that's food and habitat for bees. And so more and more often we're finding that we can't carry a bee to a flower. So the seed balls came as a package with that. And then back to that same point about the loss of wildflower meadows, that's where they'd live, like solitary bees, bumblebees, they live in the wild, and those particular species that aren't kept by beekeepers like honeybees are losing their homes. So there are bee hotels out on the market anyway, but backed from like all my research that I'd done, and by this point we were quite a few years in, I decided I wanted to create my own bee hotel kit that was like based on science. And we made it so it was flat packed, so you could build it yourself at home in like 20 minutes. And then it came with some instructions to make sure you put it up in the right place in your garden. And they're designed for cavity nesting solitary bees.
And then after that, having had a good poke on your round on your website,
yes,
today, you've gone into selling other people's products as well, which is quite,
yep,
a big leap for a manufacturing company to start stocking other people's things. So what led you to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think basically we quite quickly realized that our products had become very giftable. So although people were buying them for themselves, they were then buying them for other people to like share the experience. But also our products are very unique. Like there's nothing like it on the market. So therefore, like, you probably didn't have a Bee Revival Kit on you. So people were buying them in, like, you know, multiples and giving them as way for like Christmas, birthdays, anniversaries, the Bee Hotel kits for like moving in presents. And we kind of wanted to expand on that range of like giftable products. So we have, like, for example, three different types of books. They're like my favorite books I've read about bees that aren't too science heavy, with lots of Latin in. But it's a very carefully curated collection. We don't just stock anything that has a bee on it. It has to really have a purpose. And I've just met so many other amazing founders and manufacturers on our journey at events and, you know, talks and things like that, that I felt were relevant and had the same like values and ethos as us. So those are the kind of other products we've brought in.
And then you've, as well as buying other people's products, you now sell your products to other retailers. So how did you end up going into the wholesale? Was that like a strategic plan,
yeah,
or was it an opportunity that just arose?
No, it was definitely strategic from like the beginning, because when we were launching, well, we were like looking to launch the Bee Revival Kit, obviously nothing else existed like this. So we're like, what price point can we retail this out? What are people going to pay for this item? But also we need flexibility to like grow. And I knew from my business background that in order to manage wholesale, you obviously have to allow for the margin. And we really, well, it's not just a keyring. Like it really has a use. So we knew, I knew that it could have a higher retail value as opposed to, you know, a couple of quid and it's, you know, a face of a bee. It genuinely has, it does something. So I factored that in from the beginning. We launched in 2019 off the back of a crowdfunding campaign. And we, about a year later, went into COVID. And so we started on e-commerce. We didn't really gain like enough momentum to launch retail. So it was only really when we came out of COVID that we were able to start approaching those type of customers. And actually, most of them were coming to us. I feel so grateful to say that. But we built like a reputation over that period online. And I think our passion for what we did really shone through. And so therefore they started being like, well, we want BeVive in our store so that people can pick them up when they're visiting a Wildlife Trust centre, or maybe they're in Kew Gardens, those kind of outlets.
It's always speeds up the deal a little bit if they're coming to you because they know you know what you're talking about in the first place, isn't it? It's like, that's an easier discussion. So I'm guessing the other thing that's really changed in the business since you launched is the team. So what does the team look like? Because I'm guessing it's no longer just you.
Yeah, no, it's no. So it was me in the beginning and I was doing it all from my spare room. But it grew too big and then we realised we had to move it out. And so we moved it into our first premises. And that was kind of off the back, actually, of a video going viral. So Mackie Bella, she's an amazing author, she had a keyring that I wasn't aware of. And she was running one day and came across a bee, saved it, recorded the whole thing and posted it online, which didn't ask her to do. And her following was, they follow you along your journey. So like if you do something, they're like, oh, that's great. Let's do it too. They're really hot. They're really in it with her. And so we like sold out of our products in like 24 hours and it gave us enough funds to fund that first move into. And I actually did move into it alone. Then I had the space to actually bring people in. We have since moved to another unit, which is like a barn conversion. We've taken all of our machinery there. We've upgraded it all. And now we are a team of seven. So we manufacture in-house. So we have components come from multiple different places, from the UK where possible, but also Europe and China. And then we put it all together.
So you've got the manufacturing team out of that seven. What else are you doing as a team? Are you outsourcing anything or is everything in-house?
So like our web development is out of house. We do our marketing in-house, the manufacturing in-house. I manage most of the sales. Yeah, but we're a small team, but we keep very busy.
Clearly very busy. So one of the other things I noticed you're doing a lot of is kind of, it's not just about selling product. You're busy with charities, with organizations, with schools and training and everything. What led you to, because I think a lot of startups would just go, yeah, we're all about growing the business. But you've made that an essential part of the business. Tell us a bit about why that's a key part of BeVive for you.
The education is a key part for me. And I do it because I want to do it and because I feel like really grateful that I have the time. Like when I was working full time, I'd be like, and schools would reach out to me. I'd be like, oh, I can't. Like, I just can't. Like, I'm employed during the day and then I'm packing orders at night and obviously the schools aren't open on a weekend. So I was like, oh, one day when I run BeVive full time, I'll make sure that I have time. I guess maybe it's more of like a personal reason for doing it. And like, but off the back of it, then comes, it just incidentally comes alongside it. And the customers that like buy our products, I think they like value that we give back and that we're not just selling to make money. We're like selling to make a difference. So yeah, it kind of, that it was for me, it's a personal thing really, but incidentally, obviously it has an effect on the business.
And you partner with a lot of charities and other organisations as well. Tell us a bit about that, how that fits in.
Yeah, so like I remember having a dream board, like my first dream board, like whiteboard when I first started, and I had like key names written on there, and the WWF was one of them. And I will never forget the day they reached out to us. It took a few years because obviously they had to see our like brand reputation build and, you know, see that we were going to still be in it for the long game. And now we actually have a collection of like co-branded products with them, and all the sales from the shop on their website go to fund their vital projects and that are pollinator related, but also, you know, worldwide, as we know. And yeah, that's just like a very, very rewarding feeling.
Very cool. When you, like someone who you've always wanted to work with, kind of comes to you, must be an amazing moment of kind of, we are on the right track, we are doing the right things.
Yeah, it's definitely validation.
That's the word I was looking for and couldn't find. So you were telling me about me before we hit the record button that you're just about to launch a Kickstarter. And obviously you began the business with a Kickstarter, and what, 8 years later, you're about to do another one. Audience, by the time you hear this, the Kickstarter will have fully happened. So you can kind of see the results, I suppose, if you go and have a look on the link LinkedIn or when you're hearing this. But we're going to talk a bit about why you're doing it, how you put it together and so forth. So why a Kickstarter now when you're such a growing business? Why did you choose Kickstarter as the way to do what you're about to do?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, we started with the crowdfunder. It is basically for two reasons. Number one, the funding. So we'd got to the point of like final prototype and we needed to place the first order. So we needed the funds. We'd like run out of our own personal money. But also, like for me, like the crowdfunding aspect of it is like you're creating a community to launch a product before it's like a thing, and you take them on that journey with you and you educate them on the product that you're trying, that you're creating, and like why do we need this product and how will it benefit my garden or the environment or so and so. And so we know that Kickstarter is a good platform for us because it's going to help us reach a new audience and build our community further, as well as funding this new item. And essentially we're looking to fund for the mold, and creating the keyring was not as complex as this mold is, and so therefore we are going to be like offering incentives, so essentially you can get the item at like cost price, and so you'll kind of be like all of our community can get like their foot in the door to, yeah.
So the basic why is we've got an idea for a new product. We need a big cash injection. We know this works, so we'll do this.
Yeah.
Other people would, I don't know, ask family and friends, go to the bank, chuck it on a credit card. What for you was the reason for doing the Kickstarter? Is there more elements that, I mean, we've talked about community a lot, so I wonder if there's that element in it as well of the joy of running a Kickstarter, could one say, the side benefits of it?
Yeah, it's like camaraderie, like let's do this. And I think by building a Kickstarter, I mean, the amount of assets that you have to curate to create a Kickstarter is immense. And it wasn't so big like back then. Like I actually remember I did like one video, sat in a field and, you know, and like pitched the idea with my prototype in my hand for about 30 seconds. But nowadays, obviously, what you're able to create is so vast. And so the Kickstarter, it's like a catalogue into what this new product is going to be and how it works. And so it's, yeah, you could go to a bank or maybe ask family and friends or credit card, but they don't listen to you. They don't understand. They don't understand it. And we want to get this product out there because the more people that see it, then the more bees that we're going to be able to home and help survive.
So how did you decide when to run the Kickstarter. You said the first time you did the Kickstarter, you reached the point where you needed to place the first order for raw materials, which is obviously the point at which you need, really need the cash. This one has clearly been very strategically thought out. But, you know, is it like the day after the Kickstarter ends, that's when you need to hit go on the buying the mold? Or is it you've got an idea and you want the cash ready to, then you'll build the mold a month later? How did you decide when to actually run it?
It's ready. We have been working on this for a long time. My partner and co-founder of B-Vive, Jake, his background is in architectural technician. And so it's basically a combined effort of like my research and his technical ability kind of amalgamated. Then obviously our design background. So we have like we're very opinionated on like what it should look like and those kind of things. But it's literally ready to go. Like it's been as soon as we hit 100%, then it will literally be like go. And we want to get them in people's hands before, so that bees nesting this spring, summer can utilize it. Otherwise we're waiting another year, another life cycle. And so, yeah, that's the reason why.
Got it. And then how long, nuts and bolts time, how many days is your Kickstarter going to run for? And let's tie into that. How much of the business is going to be, you know, the resources of the business, the humans, et cetera, it's going to be focused on that Kickstarter for that time period? Because I would assume it's down tools on everything. Everybody is manning the Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's like, so it's 30 days. My partner is pretty much his full-time job. And then the rest of the team, we're basically manufacturing all of our other products. So essentially we're getting like prepared. So May is like one of our busiest times of year. The bees are out, they're buzzing, they're like causing loads of joy in the garden. And then it's No Mow May. So like the campaigns that we run around that. And then on the 20th of May is World Bee Day, where we celebrate bees. And so what we're doing is preparing all of our stock. And so as soon as the Kickstarter is over, funded, and the products start arriving, then everyone is all hands on deck to assemble.
Gosh, so it's more like the actual Kickstarter time period. You've got Jake ring-fenced to work on that, you know, whilst pulling on anyone else if he needs to, but the rest of you are working on preparation for kind of post-Kickstarter. And then the time when everyone's like fully on it is as soon as you can do the dispatching and make all those people who've supported you happy.
Yeah, it's almost like pre and post. Yeah. And then you've just got like the communicator in between. And that communicator is actually really important, because if I had invested in somebody else's idea, I would want to know where it's at. What are they doing? Let's see some photos. Like, communicate with your audience. Like, they are believing in you and what you can create. And that's why we haven't launched it until we knew we were ready. Like, everything is covered. Everything is thought about. And then, yeah, and then basically as soon as they land, we know how to deal with it. And it's good because we've done it before. And yeah, so we've prepared our team.
Yeah, forewarned is forearmed, isn't it, in these things? Yeah.
exactly. And so, yeah, and then we'll work basically that those who contributed, they'll get theirs first, and then the rest will follow online.
And you mentioned, you know, we talked about forewarned is forearmed, and you talked about having so many assets created in advance for the Kickstarter. You talked about the communications between end of Kickstarter and actual product delivery. How much of that, you know, kind of percentage-wise of that communication, that copy, those graphics, the videos, have you already done? And how much will you be kind of, I guess, pivoting on what, you know, reacting to what's actually happening?
Yeah, so everything is created apart from one video. I've got one video left to film tomorrow, and that was because of the weather. And today's, yeah, so it was either today or tomorrow. So today I'm here. And tomorrow I've got a final video to record, which is like the opening scene of basically telling everyone what the product is and why we've created it and how they can get involved. And then it's ready to go. But yeah, you're right. You do have to pivot in between. And so we'll just basically take as it comes.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the Top Tips Round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Faye, are you ready for the top tips?
Okay, go.
Okay then, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So this is my top book that I recommend to everyone. It's called It's Your Ship by Michael Abrashoff. And you can read it if you have a team or an anticipation of building a team, because it's all about it's your ship. It's not my ship. We're like in this together. And that probably actually now saying it out loud is like all the way through my business, but it also is all the way through your team. And it has to feel like they're part of the mission, part of the, you know, like we all do it together.
Nice.
So yeah, I love that book.
Excellent. I don't think I've heard of that one before. I shall have to go and have a look.
Yes.
The traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I feel like, so social media gets the press it deserves, but I think it's the way that you use it. So like plugging, not necessarily putting loads of money into Meta ads, like gives you the return on investment that you would like. And so we've done other types of incentives. For example, we have the VIB club. So it's very important. Be Viva, play on words. And basically it came from where people were saving bees and then videoing it, sharing it. And we were like, they were taking the most amazing photos and videos. And we were like, how do we reward them for this marketing? And so that's how we did it. So you could write into us and claim your like VIB, but we still can. People do it every day. And we ship it out. Like it's almost like it's been compared to like a Blue Peter badge. And I just think that way of that marketing style, I think, is underestimated on those platforms.
Nice. So the VIB club isn't a kind of influencer recruitment campaign. It's a customer reward campaign for doing what they were going to do anyway, to some extent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Very cool. I like that. It clearly fits with your business ethos as well.
Yeah, it's like I just remember the first year looking at a folder of images that honestly I had like 1,500 images and I was like, that's so cool. I haven't had to pay for photography for an entire year of my business. What can I do to say thank you? And then this pin came in my head and I was like, that's going to cost me nothing like compared to, but make them feel so valued and that they're doing something really great and they can put it on their coat and people can ask them like, what does that mean? And then they can, I think it's a really fun way of marketing that everyone kind of benefits from.
Yeah, I think it's a genius move.
Oh,
the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Yeah, so we use Asana as a project management tool and we love it. It's actually one of my colleagues who brought it into the team. He'd previous user, another company. And now we say we have like just a funny thing about basically if it's not on Asana, it doesn't happen. And yeah.
So true. Asana is the rocket that we do everything via. And just the idea of trying to leave it, just, oh my God.
I know, you can't.
Migration. Oh.
The flows, automizations that are just, I just like really like it. So yeah.
Yeah, you're preaching to the converted with me, so hopefully you'll convince some of the audience to switch over as well. Okay, Faye, the carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Oh, so I think when I think of e-commerce, I think a lot about packaging, like all the time, because packaging could be so much better for so many businesses. And it takes me back to the whole like reduce, reuse, recycle. And I honestly believe that by monitoring your packaging from a reducing perspective, so like the transit, the use of plastic, reusing. So like, how can you reuse your recycling? For example, we have one of those great like industrial shredders. So it turns cardboard that comes in back into cardboard that goes out, and recycling. So actually, I was at a talk the other day and they were talking about household recycling and how 55% of people don't recycle their household recycling. And it's similar in business, but apart from it's slightly lower, 37%. But I think that of the amount of the million of tons, like even if we progressed 1-2% every year, the impact that we have would be amazing. So I think I answered your question.
I think you did answer the question, yeah. But you make such a good point. You know, it's like there's so much. You make two good points, I think, there. One, there are so many good ways of being able to reuse stuff within your own control without having to, you know, pay for a recycling bin or whatever else, you know, you have to do as a business. But there's also, you know, small changes can have a big impact.
Yeah.
You know,
I often talk about like progress over perfection, because you can't do everything in one day and maybe you don't have the resources to or the finance to. So it's like, what can you do in your control? And there's so many ways to reduce carbon. But I think thinking from an e-commerce perspective, if you're delivering product, packaging has to be one of them.
Yeah. Totally agree. The in packaging and the out packaging.
Yes.
Before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Yes. So you can find us online at bvive.com. Similarly on Instagram, Facebook at bvive. And I also have a discount code for you all. If you made it this far, just to say thank you. And it's masterplan for 15% off.
I suppose now is the perfect time to be getting your bee revival kit, because they're out and about, aren't they? The bees, they're everywhere now.
Yeah, so they've just started waking up, obviously early March, and they might not have much to forage from. So that this is a great kind of opportunity to use your bee revival kit. And then solitary bee species, yeah, around now, but well, now, get the bee hotel up. You can even make your own. We have an activity you can download from the blog of our website, but if you want one pre-packaged with instructions then you can also get it. But you can support bees all throughout the year. Like, even people say like you can spot them in December. They shouldn't be around, but you know.
But they might be. Faye, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been fascinating chatting with you. And I wish you huge luck for the Kickstarter and the packaging that comes after the Kickstarter as well, because it sounds like that's going to be the busier time period. So so good luck with it all. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, listening to this, you can't help but be aware of how passionate Faye is about bees and the purpose of her business. And it makes all those different bits and pieces she's got going on fit together so seamlessly. And fascinating to hear about how they are structuring the business around that Kickstarter this year. First of all, you know, prepping everything in advance so just one person is permanently distracted by it for the 30 days it's running. With the rest of the team during that time catching up on everything else. So as once the Kickstarter's done and they've got that mold in, and they're then able to quickly do the manufacturing to fulfill those orders and then continue with the product launch. Really fascinating how strategically they are kind of focusing week by week on what they're doing to get through all of that. And lots of other courses. I love the VIB club. It's not exactly a customer ambassador club. It's not exactly a loyalty club, but it has the impact of all of that. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including the top tips and the links to what we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. And you can also use our special direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the right page on the website. When you get there, why not add yourself to the Chloe Thomas email newsletter list? Yes. I would love to be sending you messages to keep you up to date with what's going on this podcast, our other podcast, and the other stuff we're up to. So do sign up for that whilst you're there on the site. And if you like this episode, why not have a listen to episode 428, where I'm chatting with another bee-obsessed business with a guest called Faye. What are the chances? Faye from Green and Blue, and episode 428 is all about their journey becoming a B Corp and staying a B Corp. And if you're really passionate about bees, then episode 160 is where that Faye from Green and Blue, not Faye from Beevive, first came on the show to talk about their guest blogging program. That's episode 160. So that's 160 and 428 to fill your bee needs. You can also hear all our episodes with Shopify sellers at ecmp.info/Shopify. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help you all to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.